Winning comes in all shapes and sizes. Every day there's an opportunity for a win, just like scratchers from the Virginia Lottery. Every day grab and go, every day giftable, every day fun. It's where anticipation meets instant gratification. And they're satisfying to scratch, no matter the outcome. Like the new Virginia Lottery Scratcher Colossal Cash. It's loaded with $100 to $500 prizes. Now, that's an everyday win. Drive to the nearest Virginia Lottery retail location and pick up a scratcher today. Odds of winning any prize, 1 in 3.21.
At Lowe's, we're your go-to for great gardening values every day. That's why we've lowered our price on select bagged mulch, now starting at just $2.88 a bag. Mulch helps prevent weeds and retains moisture, and when you put it down around trees, shrubs, and flower beds, you'll see how beautiful it makes your outdoor space, just in time to welcome back family and friends. Shop online and pick up in-store. Lowe's, home to the best part of summer. Selection and product availability vary by location. While supplies last, U.S. only, excludes Alaska and Hawaii.
Hi folks, welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. Tonight we continue our path through the AFC North looking at the matchups for the Baltimore Ravens and in our comfortable seats on June the 5th as we record this, thinking about the first matchups with the Browns, which will be what, December?
Week 12 and week 14.
The Browns, no bye week between, of course. Joining me, you probably recognize his voice already, is Jason Smith. Jason, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Ken. This is the one I'm most excited about.
Yeah, it's Cleveland, the up-and-coming team, certainly in the division. A lot of people think they're the favorite to win the AFC North coming off the bat. I wouldn't argue with that. I think it's a very solid team top to bottom. We're going to talk about a few matchups that are key, but boy, the Browns, a very deep roster.
They do. They have a very deep starting roster. And I think that that's the important part that a lot of people will miss, and especially in a 17-game season, the Ravens are one of the best, the deepest roster as far as if a starter goes down in a key position, they have someone that at least you can expect to do a decent job in their place. And that will be the challenge for the Browns, is to stay healthy and keep this. It's an all-star starters, so it's to keep the crew together.
By the way, we just observed something from Jason that's just outstanding, and I want to thank him for it for starters, because basically he disagreed with what he said, but he did it in consultantese, as I say, where he basically says, yes, I agree, they have a very deep starting roster, which is not, of course, the definition of depth at all, and he's I'm no doubt right about this, so we'll talk about this. I think they have some depth on the defensive line and other places, but we'll talk through this, Jason. So
sure.
Why don't we start on the defensive side of the ball, my friend, and pick something about it that you like that you think will be a challenge for the Ravens, or you think is an opportunity for the Ravens, perhaps?
Well, I think the thing that strikes me about this Browns defense is the amount of turnover that they've had. And it's a good thing for them because their defense hasn't been a strength. So you have a lot of new pieces in there. All of them have an upside, from the rookies to the veterans that they brought in. So it'll be interesting to see. It's an unpredictable group. And if I'm looking at it from their perspective, what they were doing did not stop the Ravens at all. So why not? Well, how much worse could the new group be? A lot of talent there.
If I have this right, I think they might have spent, they either have 8 rookies or 8 draft picks. No, it could be 9, so there must be some undrafted free agents here that really were primarily on the defense that they picked up their new young players. On offense, they only have a handful. But on defense, they have some of their key players, including their first-round draft pick, who's Greg Newsome. But the Browns are deceptive in that way because they have some players returning who we haven't seen yet. And what I think will be the most significant things for the Browns defensively is how their secondary holds up. Not a very good secondary last year. They had a lot of problems, and it started with the injury of Grant Delpit before the season started, a guy who I really liked in the 2020 draft.
Me too.
He'll be back playing free safety.
Yes, and you know, as far as the pass defense of the Browns, specifically against the Ravens, Lamar had a field day against them. I could read the numbers, but Lamar tore the Browns up last year through the air, not with his just with his legs, but through the air. And Grant Delpit, I think, is maybe the biggest key on the team because you have a steady player next to him, a veteran John Johnson, very good player. But what Delpit can do, Johnson can't, and that's covered the back end. And then, of course, Delpit's coming off a lost rookie year, so he's never played the NFL. Big question mark for a free safety.
Now, I like to not repeat stuff, but one of the things about the Browns is they really are set, if Delpit works out, to be one of those teams that doesn't have rotational safeties or guys who can play all the positions, blah, blah, blah. They have a free safety they think they can trust. And they and very much like the Bengals, who have Jesse Bates back there, who they know they can trust. And a little bit maybe unlike the Ravens, who have, you know, some flexibility in their secondary, not like with Thomas or Weddle, where they really had a pure free safety, no matter what they would say about the person in terms of being able to come up to the line of scrimmage. Delpit gives them you know, the potential to have that full safety group and the real set. They also spent a first-round draft pick at cornerback on Greg Newsome, who I loved him. I thought he was, you know, clearly worth the first-round grade, and he went to the Browns.
Right before us. Well, not right before us, but close enough for me to be upset that they got him, because his physical skills translate. He was a 4.3, I want to say 4.39. I saw very quick, and then he's strong physically too. So he's not a smaller corner. He's big enough. He's big, strong, fast corner. And that's the thing with this team. You have Delpit, extremely talented, but we haven't seen him play in the NFL. Newsome, extremely talented on the edge, not the edge, but the boundaries, covering corners, big press man corner capability. And then you have their prized possession of the draft, Wusu-Koramoah, at linebacker. So you have some guys at key positions that haven't played in the NFL. A lot of upside, but I expect some rookie growing pains there too.
Yeah, obviously some positions where they have really struggled in the past. Obviously, Cleveland has not been able to find those inside linebackers. Yeah, they were okay. And I'm freaking, I've lost the name. Begins with an S.
And linebackers?
Yes, Schofield, but it's not that.
Oh, okay.
You know who I'm talking about. Schobert.
Yes, Joe Schobert.
So Schobert was a guy who was off and on as a pass defender and pretty good at times, had four interceptions a few years ago, whether I was two or three. But they really haven't put together good inside linebackers, and yet they really don't play a ton of dime. So what they've done is they've kept a bad player on the field for the Ravens to kind of take advantage of, even in passing situations. You know, a lot of teams are afraid of stopping the run with the Ravens on almost any down, but I think most teams need to get away from that, and they need to be able to put another light guy in the box when the situation dictates it.
And it's a problem for them because Mark Andrews has given them a lot of problems. Mm-hmm. So they need to find a way to slow Mark Andrews down. And you know, the Ravens offense is at its best when it's going through Andrews in the running game, just churning out medium, short to medium gains. So I don't know if that's something that they're going to ask JOK to do. I mean, Koramoah is a very good athlete, but I see him more as a downhill player. And, as a rookie, he's going to struggle in coverage. But that's
Patrick
the one area.
Queen-esque, if you.
Patrick Queen, yes, right. He's a downhill player. He's a thumper that has a lot of speed. So, yeah, I would say that's a great comparison, Queen, to Koramoah, who's obviously a more physical player, I think. He's in old-school mode. But they brought in Anthony Walker, is what I was trying to get to, who is a steady presence at Mike. And I think that that'll help just give him some glue to that position.
All right, they have a guy I liked from LSU and Jacob Phillips at inside linebacker. We don't have to go over all these inside linebackers, but it's not like they haven't tried to bring in some new blood, to draft different people, to try different people there. It really hasn't worked for them. So whatever they've done, they've had players who've been jumpy and against play action against the Ravens. What I think is the biggest fear I have about this Browns team and the biggest chance that they completely figure it out defensively isn't the addition of Clowney, which we'll get to in a minute. It's the changes on the back end that getting Newsome at one corner may allow them to play some island ball. Getting Delpit on the back end may eliminate a portion of the field or make it more dangerous for Lamar to use that portion. And in particular, I mean, one of the things Delpit can take away, not just, you know, taking away the deep middle in a lot of ways, but he can take away some of the ability to extend plays. If he's lurking back there, you suddenly become fearful to throw the ball back across the middle of the field, which you're not supposed to do anyway. But you take some chances on it if you're Lamar, because you draw the entire defense to you. Well, Grant Delpit in the middle of the field can change that.
That's true. And, you know, those broken plays turned out to be positive plays a large majority of the time for the Ravens. I mean, things go wrong. Guys get knocked off their route, break down in the line, and then Lamar makes a 5-yard scramble, 10 yards out of it, gets 10 yards out of it. But, yes, their secondary is going to be important to them. As far as it relates to the Ravens, I think it's interesting because the areas you're talking about are the areas in which we're trying to expand our game in, the passing game, attacking all areas of the field. But I'm not sure if they have shored up their run defense enough to make it matter versus the Ravens specifically. Against a lot of teams, yes, but Myles Garrett was on the team when we were running all over him last year. Clowney, of course, is a great run defender. That was a good addition mm-hmm. for them. But you're losing Ogunjobi, who was a Ravens killer, and Sheldon Richardson, right? So
that's a good run defender gone.
They had some pretty good run defenders, and we ran all over them, and they haven't really improved that area, I don't see, except for
Andrew Billings. So I believe, did he opt out last year, or did he not play, or was he hurt? One of those.
Yes. I think he opted out. He signed from the Bengals and opted out, if I'm not mistaken.
Right. So they put the defensive line in the draft had very few good players, but Tommy Togiai was one of the people a lot of people liked. I think he's probably a little undersized, which means I think the Ravens will be able to handle him at defensive tackle or nose tackle, wherever he lines up for the Browns in this year. They have Malik Jackson. Tackerist McKinney is still there. He passed around like a bad cold in terms of the opportunities people had to take him last year, but he ended up with the Browns. Jordan Elliott, a guy from Missouri, right? Missouri or Iowa? I always get that confused.
Yes, it was the black and gold, but it was Missouri this time.
Okay, there you go. I liked in the draft the previous year. It went in the, late first, early second round?
I want to say second, but we could be wrong on that. But he had first round great, or he was in a lot of first round of mocks. Mm-hmm. Jordan Elliott, good player, and I think he's a balanced player. If you remember it the same way, correct me, but I think he provided a little push with his run defense.
I won't go too much into this because I'm sure I'll say something wrong if I do. But but this is in total number of players. This is more than Cleveland has had in the past. Now, they, you know, playing a 4-3, they've been one of the teams that's asked a lot of their guys to play more snaps than you might like. And this year, I don't doubt that Garrett and Clowney are going to be asked to play a lot of snaps. But Clowney, at the least, at his age and with his history, is probably not going to play all the snaps. They're going to have to pitch count him in some way. Garrett has been more able to continue play at a very high level while playing a lot of snaps.
I could see Cleveland adding a veteran edge rusher or a camp cut after in August, say training camp, to mm-hmm. get a good look at their guys and maybe move on, because you're depending on Myles Garrett for a lot in that defense. But also Clowney, he's very good against the run when he's in there, and he has games where he's unstoppable. So to go from Clowney to attack McKinley or Joe Jackson or any of the other guys they have in there that can play the edge is a giant drop off. And I don't think you can afford that if you're trying to beat the Ravens for the division title. It's late in the season, especially. Who knows what could happen?
Right. Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think that if there are going to be games where they just have to throw caution to the wind and put those guys out there. And not that Clowney is like him or that he's as old as McPhee, but McPhee, he's so valuable in all the things he can do for the Ravens. Despite the fact the Ravens really need to pitch count him, they're going to be very tempted to keep him on the field. This year, they certainly were tremendously tempted in 2019, and he ended his season early, and then last year played a lot of snaps as well. He ended up, you know, being the team, one of the team's really good run defenders, especially in that playoff game.
So I don't know. This is kind of off topic, but I think it's worth asking you. Could you see a scenario in which McPhee is playing most of his snaps as a sub rusher inside because we upgraded the run defense supposedly with Adafi Owe and even Dalen Hayes? You say, hey, we don't need Mafe to set the edge as much. Let's use him for his inside pass rush.
Yeah, I don't see that being the answer in this first year. I think inevitably you ought to project growing pains going from college to pro. So while I am very optimistic about Owe's future, I think and they've got some great looking reps that they've published out of OTAs. I think we're gonna have to wait and see about the guys, what he truly picks up from coaching in this offseason, in the camp to follow, and then as the season goes along, in terms of whether or not he truly has the get off ready or not, he truly has the first contact mentality. I think he needs to develop in order to be an effective pass rusher, and frankly, to be an effective run defender at this level. If his game is all pursuit, it's not like that would be useless. It's just not as valuable as we need him to be. So I think there'll be growing pains. And Mafe, much more of a dedicated first contact, and even at his age, thunderous first step. Great first step still. Not what it was in 2014. I'll be the first to admit that, but still a very fine football player. And yeah, I expect him to kick inside, but I think they need him too much on the edge on the early downs too, and that's going to be an internal conflict of how they eyedropperize his snaps.
Okay, it's great. Thank you, Ken. I appreciate that. I just thought of that. So I'm thinking about Clowney. You know, if he's going to need to show up for them on the edge, because they really don't have a lot else as far as run defense. That'll be very, very interesting. Playing a team like Cleveland 2 weeks in a row with their bye week in. They're playing us twice in a row with their bye week in between is going to be a huge challenge. And it's going to take a lot of players to get through that matchup.
Yeah, complete crap schedule deal for the Ravens, obviously, to have that. The Browns, the easiest schedule of the AFC North contenders, and I'll see, I want to include the Bengals. Bengals, a plus 17 schedule, the Browns, a plus 12. We won't go into this whole scheduling nonsense, but the Ravens and Steelers, very similar schedules, minus 7 and minus 8 respectively, really got the short end of the stick. It often happens because of Thursday night games that there's kind of a little bit of a biorhythm kind of change from year to year in terms of who gets a tough schedule. But boy, the Ravens last year got a Thursday game that they didn't have to play. And I think part of what the NFL did was say, we're not making it easy for the Ravens this year after they didn't even have to play their hard schedule last year because they got out of it. So I'm not sure if that was part of the deal, but it wouldn't surprise me because the Ravens certainly got no favors in terms of their schedule, and the Steelers as well could make that same complaint.
And I think, wasn't it 2019 where we had alternating games home and away every week?
Yeah.
So pretty much for 2 years in a row, we were pretty fortunate, I think, with the schedule. This one is not like that. And, you know, I expect the Browns to be our main competition at the end of the day in the AFC North. It's just the way I see the two teams. And a lot of people agree with me about that, I'm sure. But having the two games, week 12, week 14, I think it's really going to be a testament to the team's depth at certain positions. And if I'm looking at the Browns, I would actually, unlike the other two teams in this division, I want to establish that run and see if they can stop it and give me a good idea of what we have to do to win this game early.
All right. Well, we'll go ahead and move over to the offense since it seems like we've done that right now. In terms of how they attack Garrett and Clowney, for starters, what would you do to do that? How would you establish the run differently against those guys?
I think you can run at Myles Garrett, but I wouldn't test Clowney. And I think with Billings, Elliott, Malik Jackson, you know, there's not a ton of talent in between the tackles for the Browns on defense. That's where I would go. I think it's a Gus Edwards type game. Or maybe you run some inverted options to threaten Lamar's ability in there. But I think they can be had in the middle with the young linebackers and with an average crew on the inside of their defensive tackles, I think is their weakest part of their defense.
Mm-hmm. Certainly not a terrible group of tackles and some depth there, but we'll see. A lot of people like Andrew Billings more. I do like him. And 2 years ago, he's certainly a good player for the Bengals. The question is, is he still the same guy? And I guess he's, 28, 29 now? So he's not a spring chicken anymore. But was a good player the last time we saw him out there, that's for sure. With Clowney, Well, with both Connie and Garrett, I like the idea of forcing guys like that into controlled rush lanes. And this will be the biggest test for the Ravens' two offensive tackles. By week 12, one of the nice things about the schedule, we should know if Ronnie Stanley is truly back or not yet at that point. He might not start the season for the Ravens. Very possible Villanueva ends up starting at left tackle, and the Ravens have, you know, a guy that they probably don't want at right tackle, frankly, starting the year, whoever that may be, or is not optimal. But by then, we should have Ronnie Stanley and Villanueva as the two tackles, I would think.
And Nick Boyle was a big, when I watched, I went back and watched Clowney on the Seahawks from 2019, and it was one of Boyle's, I thought, best games as a Raven. It's the one where Lamar said, yeah, coach, let's go for it.
Yep.
Big game. A lot of fans out there remember it. And Boyle, you know, I saw him against a man as built like Clowney, and watch him uproot Clowney, literally get leverage and lift one of his feet off the ground and turn Clowney and do this to Clowney. And then the next thing you know, he's out there cutting blockers in the second level and third level. Nick Boyle is a weapon, especially when you have a guy as stout as Clowney on the edge.
And was he lining up then mostly on the right side where Boyle would have been, but Boyle could have been diving into the line and other things, of course, but mostly on the right side for Boyle. And so it would have been Orlando Boyle. Brown would have been maybe not blocking him that year with
exactly.
The option.
Exactly. And I remember a handful of plays where Orlando would help Boyle initially, but go elsewhere. So it wasn't a combo block, and he would just give Boyle basically he didn't take a lot of time on that combo block either. Mm-hmm. He didn't stick around. It was just basically, hey, Nick, give you a split second to get in front of him, and Nick was twisting him down, blocking the heck out of him, man. But that was a game that really stuck out for Boyle, and being so late in the season, hopefully Nick Boyle's 100% by then, and since I've seen him handle Clowney before, I'll have faith in Boyle that he can be a big part of the run game when we do run that way.
All right. Looking forward to that, certainly. So, yeah, the Browns, obviously, with some big positives on their defensive side of the ball. Let's switch over to the offense. And there, you know, the Browns have not invested nearly as much this offseason in the offensive side of the ball. They have had a very good offensive line. They still have a very good offensive line with Wills, Betonio, Treader, Teller, and Conklin. That's as good a five as any in the NFL right now.
Yeah, I was going to say they fixed their offense last year, in my opinion, when they hired Kevin Stefanski and they put together this offensive line. They spent their first round pick on Jedrick Wills. Mm-hmm. So as much investment as we went over a lot of the players on defense, a lot of high picks on that defense, really they've done it with free agents. They have Jedrick Wills, of course, who they drafted, but it's a veteran group. It's a good group. And what I love about this side of the ball for both teams is you're returning a ton of players. It's a lot of continuity between the two groups. The Ravens lost a couple edge rushers. The Browns offense looks about the same. Ravens defense looks about the same, except for those edge rushers.
Yeah. We've mentioned this several times over the course of several shows, but the Browns dominated the offensive and defensive lines in that week one matchup, despite the fact the Ravens won by 32. And I've mentioned it before. I've basically never seen that. The Ravens won that game based on the quarterback play, basically. Mayfield pretty much shit the bed in that game. And at the same time, Lamar Jackson, with only four ample time and space opportunities out of 27 dropbacks, managed a 152 passer rating, which is just out of the box.
So break that down. 20 of 25 for 275, 11 yards per attempt for Lamar in a game where we had the lead, and we got it early, but Lamar was a big part of that. He was lights out week one last year.
Yep. It absolutely was. It made all kinds of things happen on the move in that game, made all kinds of things happen on extended plays, which was really impressive. Had some of his best throws of the season. One I remember is moving left, the throw to Andrews in the corner, near corner of the end zone, was a thing of beauty.
Yes, it's kind of hard to predict on the Browns offense. exactly what happened, what the difference was between their first game and their second game on offense. Mm-hmm. They, you know, the Browns only scored 6 points the first game. And then, of course, the Monday Night Classic was later in the year, was 47-42. So they went from scoring 6 points the first game to 42 the second game. And the only logical thing I can attribute that to, other than falling behind early, was that that was Stefanski's first game as their head coach, as their coordinator. So it's quite possible that they were probable that they got more comfortable as the year went along.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the Browns improved greatly from that first week performance with the things that went wrong. You know, looking at that offensive line, you really have to trip over yourself to fail with an offensive line that good. And it's not like the Browns' skill position players are bad either. Obviously, this is a pivotal year for Mayfield. It's year four. They've already committed to him for year five. But if he had another year like 2019, where he had more interceptions and touchdowns, I think it's possible he could be five and done in Cleveland. I don't think it's necessary that they go ahead and sign him to a long-term deal. Where are you on that?
I think they'd be taking a big chance, and I'm not sure that after the long, barren stretch that they had, that they'd be willing to just get rid of a guy they know who is a good quarterback. You know, I the fear of the unknown, like if it was a successful organization with a long history and they can afford to strike out and not alienate the fans, but the fans love Baker Mayfield for the respectability he brought back to Cleveland, and if you let him go, the guy who brings him in better be as good.
A lot of pressure.
Yes, a lot of pressure.
And they're not going to have the number one overall pick again, no matter what, with this roster.
Right.
You know, to try and find his replacement. It's still exactly what you hope to, is put divisional rivals in a position. I'm sure they're hoping bad things for Lamar Jackson this year. But whatever happens, I mean, this is a real seesaw year for the Browns organization, not just for Mayfield. If it works out and Mayfield ends up becoming the quarterback who's going to be there for a decade for the Browns, well, that's, first of all, that's a real bad thing for the Ravens. But second of all, how much they pay for that is really dependent on this year's performance.
Sure is. I mean, you know, I guess they could have the excuse that, well, we didn't really invest in the weapons. But like you said, that his main weapon is that offensive line.
Oh,
I mean, 31 other quarterbacks would love to have that line. It's just a well-balanced group, so.
I have no idea how they'd make that claim, because the Browns are spending the most on offense of any team in the NFL. The Ravens are the second least, I think. If they're not the second least, they're the third least, but the Browns spent the most. And it's one of the interesting things, and the Jake Burns joined me for the Browns roster preview, and one of the points he made was that the Browns still have some money, but they want to roll that money over to next year because they really haven't got a lot of their contract situations resolved, and they're not in the same kind of really excellent position the Ravens are, where while they have a couple of good players to sign, they also have money to do it. And so the Ravens are ahead of the game a little bit in terms of planning for 2022, while fans get all upset that we didn't sign one more wide receiver or one more edge rusher for 2021, you know, there's good reasons for that. There are good reasons to keep a few quatloos in the piggy bank there.
Right. You can see when it catches up to you, it catches up to you. And that happened to Pittsburgh. So as much as you can manipulate the cap, it helps. You can spend, you can do something on, I don't want to say on a whim because everything's calculated, but you can move quickly if you have the cap to do so and figure it out later. But yes, it's kind of just struck me, as much pressure as you feel that we hear as Ravens fans, okay, we're in the Lamar window. You know, we're going to have to pay him. We're not going to be able to.
Been thinking about McDonald's all day. Can't get it off my mind. I can already taste it. Ooh, got my mind on my mouth and my mouth ready for some Mickey D's deal.
There's a deal for every moment at McDonald's.
Right now, get two of your favorites for just $3.50. Mix and match a classic McChicken, a hot and spicy McChicken, or a juicy McDouble. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Winning comes in all shapes and sizes. Every day there's an opportunity for a win, just like scratchers from the Virginia Lottery. Every day grab and go, every day giftable, every day fun. It's where anticipation meets instant gratification. And they're satisfying to scratch, no matter the outcome. Like the new Virginia Lottery Scratcher Colossal Cash. It's loaded with $100 to $500 prizes. Now, that's an everyday win. Drive to the nearest Virginia Lottery retail location and pick up a scratcher today. Odds of winning any prize, 1 in 3.21.
For this team, I think the pressure's on Cleveland even more. I mean, they have they have Baker cheap. You know, they have this line all in their seemingly in their prime playing well. They have Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt, who are going to get much more expensive. So the pressure is on this team, especially as we talked about the defense having all this young talent, unproven talent. You know, if the defense struggles to adjust and gel together, a lot of pressure is going to be on this Browns group. So it's going to be on the offense, I think, to carry them early.
Right. That offensive line is going to get supremely expensive in a couple of years. They're already paying Treader, Conklin, Betonio pretty well. Wills is making first round money. So it's not like he makes nothing, but he also doesn't make anything like what he will make. And then Wyatt Teller was a big surprise. So he'll, you know, make some money at some point, but he's the one guy they'll have cheap for a while.
Yes, it's a great offensive line, but the window, as we just said, you know, we feel like we have that here with Ravens fans. Say, let's make the most of the quarterback on the rookie contract. Well, if you look at their roster, it's not just the quarterback on a rookie contract. It's everywhere else. There's a lot of people getting raises on the Browns coming up.
Right. Very, very much true. All right. Well, let's see. So we've hit about the importance of this year for Mayfield. What about the running game? Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
I do, because this is the one thing that I think out of all the others that could really give the Ravens problems. The Ravens have prided themselves forever on run defense. And last year, as a whole, the Ravens gave up 4.6 yards per rush. And if you're not a numbers guy, that's not horrible. That's middle of the packish. But it's just not up to the Ravens standard of, hey, we want to stop the run first and then create all this chaos afterwards. And the Browns, even in week one, when they lost to the Ravens 38-6, they averaged 5.1 yards per carry. So their running game is legitimate. It's not just the offensive line, but the backs too. It's the Stefanski scheme where you have a lot of play action built out of it. So you have to respect that running game, but you have to also respect the passing game. It creates indecision. This is a team that's going to be in the top five rushing if their line stays together again this year. No doubt about it in my mind.
Yeah, just to push forward that point a lot. The Ravens, in their first 23 seasons, I believe 2019 was the first year they allowed a 4.0 or more yards per rush in the franchise's history, which is incredible, by the way. Just absolutely incredible. In 2012, by the way, this is just a weird situation. The final kneel of the season in the Week 17 loss to the Bengals, Anthony Dalton. Game didn't matter, obviously, to the Ravens. They had the playoff spot secured the previous week. But the Bengals beat them. Andy Dalton kneeled the ball on the final play, and that pulled them below 4.0 yards per carry. So it was just a weird situation, but it was kind of neat.
We're back in the green, baby. We're back in the green.
We're back in the green. But anyway, the Ravens have a very proud tradition of being able to stop the run and force the other team to do things they don't want to do. And, you know, I think more than the teams of yore, you know, Ravens have gone to more dime defense in 2019 than ever before. And that year, they gave up a lot of rushing yards, and it was by choice, in my opinion. A lot of, particularly against Buffalo, against San Francisco, they gave up some rushing yards when they were defending the pass in a way that it just made sense to do it. The stat I give is that Buffalo ran, I want to get this right, 9 times for 87 versus the dime in 2019, but they also, against the dime, passed 20 times for 7 net yards, 0.35 per play. So the Ravens obviously were doing the right thing to play a lot of dime, even though they were giving 9 yards a rush up. And people kind of miss that. And they say, well, wait a minute, hold on, we can't get run all over like this. Well, some of it's a choice. And you have a lot of big leads to protect. The other team's kind of given up on the game. They get into the let's just have one drive mentality that the Ravens love to put other teams in. And that's a time for them to run up some rushing yards.
That's what I was going to say. Well, a lot of big leads that year and a lot of prevent type defense, not technically, but a good way to describe it, I think. 5-yard run, 6-yard run, who cares? and dime defense. That I think that had a lot to do with, you know, we had to bring in Bynes and Fort to try to stabilize that linebacker crew,
for the
too.
For the first 4 weeks, they certainly did. And I've got it wrong. It's the Houston Texans, not San Francisco. San Francisco, they had trouble stopping the run, but they knew San Francisco was running the ball with seven heavies, and they finally got Ferguson in out of the game and replaced him with Ward. They finally got that edge sealed up, and they didn't allow any more big plays at that point. The game was Houston. Houston had like two runs for 80 late in the game that contributed to a high yards per rush for the game. It was over six, I believe. You know, the Ravens don't like giving up long runs. No team ever should. But if you're going to give them up when you're up 41-0 or 34-0 or whatever it was at the time, and it's a lot less painful.
It's just such a big part of the Browns' offense is to establish that run so they can play action off of it, and it really tests the discipline. I thought Marcus Peters actually had a really good game against the Browns last year because he stayed home. They're in the announcers, I think, even pointed it out on TV, but he didn't buy into that pressure when Baker Mayfield kept it, rolled back out. Peters was in the right spot. So the more success the Browns have running the ball, the more out of position you find yourself, and I think they do it by abusing edge players. I think they put a lot of pressure on the edge players. I mean, it's great that we have the Monstars, you know, with Brandon Williams leading the way there. But we had some pretty, let's say, uneven run defense from some of the guys that were in there on the edge, at least on my opinion. I don't know how you graded it.
Well,
but
I would agree this last year it wasn't an ideal situation for edge play. But I think there's bigger problems at inside linebacker. Board is in there pretty much only on passing downs at this point. We'll see how they use him this year because they've made a financial commitment to him. But he had a terrible tackling year. And Queen had a worse tackling year, as if that's even possible. He was in there for more snaps, missed about every sixth tackle. Board actually missed about every fifth, but it was fewer total tackles we're talking about. That can't happen again. I mean, the Ravens need to figure out how to get people on the ground, and Queen has a lot of things to learn about. We saw tons of flash plays from his in his rookie year, but he needs to figure out what's going on behind him in the passing game. He needs to figure out his own assignment in coverage coming off the line of scrimmage even before that, and he needs to be a better form tackler at the NFL level. He just doesn't use both arms well enough.
He's more of a pouncer. Mm-hmm. It reminds me of like a lion or some kind of predatory animal chasing down his prey and jumping on its back. Like you see a lot of that with Patrick Queen. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm hopeful. I'm not going to get overly critical of him in his rookie year, but it's something that I would have liked to seen from the rookie year. Can you at least shed a block and make a tackle? Right. Like, I don't expect you to be a coverage guru and everything else in your first year, but Queen's got to get better at the basics, especially when we play teams like the Browns.
Right. Downhill run defense is really one of the big ones. And I think some of the things they talked about last offseason were that they wanted Queen to play 100 miles an hour. Just get him playing 100 miles an hour. If he makes mistakes, he makes mistakes, but at least he's doing that. And I think he did a lot of that. I think he did a lot of the fast downhill play, and he made some choices that were not great, but he made more so. The missed tackles were a problem, despite a lot of really positive splash plays that we can honestly look at and say, hey, there's still a pretty good chance Patrick Queen ends up being a very good linebacker in this league.
Great. I mean, I think he can be a great linebacker. I really do. I was very critical of him last year, but I mean, you got to figure he's ending drives by himself with this pass rush, either by drawing a penalty or getting a sack. I mean, yeah, I mean, those are like turnovers. They're drive enders, the sacks and the penalties. So I don't have a problem with him going 100 miles an hour in run defense. It's pass defense where he gets drawn out of position trying to do too much. Mm-hmm. If he could literally just stay within the same 10-yard area, he'd be fine most of the time. And I do expect, although you talk a lot about knowing what's going on behind you, I think that'll take some more time. But from a discipline standpoint and just kind of calming down, I would say, I think he's going to be better at that in pass defense.
Right. It was actually when he had us like a sole responsibility, like cover this running back, whether it's a flat route, a wheel route, whatever it might be, you cover him. That was where he's pretty good.
Yes.
I think he can cover a tight end for you. But the problem he gets into is if there's any kind of crossing route that crosses his path, he goes for the candy. Or he might go for the candy on the play, and other teams know it. And when they see it, they find him, and they make the appropriate throw off that. Bunch formations gave him an enormous amount of problem off the line of scrimmage. Just ridiculous for what it was. That Kansas City game, complete embarrassment. And one of the things from that game that was really apparent was just how much the players were emoting at him on the field for making the wrong play. And that was Peters, especially Peters
wasn't happy. I mean, yeah, he wants things done right and disciplined.
Peters is an emoter on the field, and he emotes for himself. The one thing, if I know Peters has done something wrong, is when he's perfectly motionless.
Yep.
Like he missed the Mecole Hardman play when he got behind him in week two. We got for Kansas City. He walked off the field, arms at his side, straight down. He knew he'd bit on the underneath route. It was a gamble. Maybe it was even a good gamble. It didn't work out clearly, but he walked off and he knew it was his responsibility. He didn't have to go, my bad. That's him saying my bad. And the other time where he's flailing around, it's somebody else's bad.
Yeah, he's a really good communicator. I love that about Marcus. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, if he's very accepting. You could almost, like, the time you're talking about walking off the field, head down, hand on hips, he's almost like, you could tell he was replaying it in his head. Mm-hmm. Like, man, I thought I saw that, but it, you could tell he was lamenting it. But yeah, when Queen made a mistake, you didn't have to look far on the coach's film. It was Peters that was usually the first one there to let him know, hey man, I told you, just stay there, I got this, or you got that. So yes, not to get too far off topic, but you know, Queen is going to have to, he's going to have to play well against this Browns team. And they didn't use Andy Janovich a ton against us. He had 9 snaps. And for those that don't know, that's their fullback. And I noticed that, I have to go back and 100% sure, but when Janovich came into the game, it seemed like that's when we brought Malik Harrison into the game, almost like that's how we're going to divvy up our snaps. Janovich, okay, there you go, Malik, that's your matchup.
That's a sensible matchup, and if it weren't for the draft capital expended, you know, Malik is probably the Mike linebacker and Queen is the Will. That's not the way the draft capital was spent, so they can't really afford for that to be the case.
And we have a very good communication between their neighbors, Eric DaCosta and John Harbaugh. Mm-hmm. Very good communication, and they seem to be on the same page. But that's almost one where it just makes too much sense. If anybody wants to watch the linebackers, I'll plug my channel here at Huddle It Up Films on YouTube. I have the highlights of both Queen and Harrison. You can tell how different of players they are. Harrison will come up there and basically blow up the running lane. Lane filler, gap killer is what I call him. And then Queen, like you're talking about, it's splash plays, and there were more coverage plays in there than I remember of him matched up one-on-one and just jetting and taking off and being able to change directions, mm-hmm. even fronting a running back downfield. Queen has some really good coverage snaps. I wish they would consider it. I wish they would say, hey, John, hey, Patrick, we know who was drafted first and who we think is our long-term prized draft pick in Queen. But it really does make more sense to me, and it's easy for me to say, put Malik at Mike and put Queen at Will when both of them are on the field.
Yeah, I mean, and I don't know why they can't do that, by the way. I don't know why that can't be the rule, but they don't. It's Queen plays about 75-80% of the snaps typically, sometimes more than that, and then they shift off between Fort, Malik Harrison, and Board for that other position. In fact, they did go to some snaps where Board was the only linebacker on the field, but they also went to a lot where Board is playing this proxy safety role as the second inside linebacker because the Ravens didn't have another guy. And I think just to tie this segment of the show together, because we're doing to kind of wrap it up here, the inside linebackers, I think, will play the biggest role in stopping the Browns run game. I expect the Ravens defensive front to do what they can to create opportunity there for those linebackers to make plays. And then they're going to have to figure out how to get it done on the second level.
Yes, and that was the whole purpose of us going off on the tangent was how Queen and more so Queen matches up against this Browns team. Very, very important part of it. I'm a little still a little concerned about our edge defense against them. You know, Judon had a rough time against the Browns, so we're gonna have to get against the run at least. So we're gonna have to fix that as well. But yes, man, this is a game for Patrick Queen to show up and put a stamp on this game. Like this could be a coming out game for him where he's just tagging Chubb and Hunt all day, and they can't get it going on the ground. Next thing you know, you get Baker Mayfield in the pocket where he struggles, and he's got Ravens coming at him from everywhere. Like I could see Queen having a huge game against this team, and being the key player in whether we are able to win or lose the game or how many points they put up.
Yeah, I agree. And if he can make progress in coverage as well and be a force in the middle of the field, whether he has to be a pass rusher, which was more the case, I would say, in 2020, or he can actually provide you something of value in zone defense, that would be a very nice addition to his game.
Yes. So as far as our edge or defending the stretch zone of the Browns, do you like how we're set up on the edges to hold up against that? Or,
well, I mean, they've got McPhee and they've got Oweh. I think I expect Bowser to be leaned on very heavily for passing downs and lighter on early downs. Not a complete situational replacement because I think he'll play the most snaps of any outside linebacker, but I think he'll be relied on entirely for passing snaps. So I think then that leaves you trying to figure out, is Ferguson going to be a guy who can come back and play the run effectively? Is McPhee going to be used extremely heavily in run downs? Do they start off away with a trial by fire where he plays more run downs than we've seen played out of outside linebackers in the first year at the Ravens typically? I mean, even Terrell Suggs, situational pass rusher, is a rookie. Yes. Generational run defensive asset. Of all the edge rushers, there aren't that many edge rushers who had the kind of duration of a career that Terrell Suggs had. But I mean, in his time, he's the guy as a run stopper from that rush linebacker position.
I feel like he could come out of retirement right now and still set the
probably
edge.
Probably could. He had so much craft to his game. It didn't even require his size anymore by the time he was closing it down in his last year with the Ravens. He'd submarine guys, take two guys out of the play. He knew how to still use his bull rush effectively to get the proper depth. He just knew how to stay at home. He could sniff out that screen pass when you weren't running the ball. So
And he would set people up. He would set people up through the game too. Give them a little rope a dope here and there, and then next thing you know, wait a minute, he hadn't done that in all game. How'd he do that? Man, he had a lot of tricks up his sleeve. That's a great way to say it.
But yes, interceptions on Roethlisberger.
So that's where I'm most nervous. I guess we can transition into the pass game if you'd like to, Ken. But I mean, we handled them pretty well. As far as the pass game.
Yeah, you should be scared about the Browns' offensive line, and the Ravens' ability to generate pass rush is going to have to be, I think, mostly schematic this year. In particular, against the Browns, that's true. If they're going to get something more, it'll be from a breakout from one of two players on the inside, in my opinion, either Matt Ibike really being a lot better. Taking a step forward, let's just put it that way. Badabiki was a good player in the second half of this year in particular. If he takes a step forward, which I would really hope for, then the Ravens have got some of that youth back on the defensive line they want. The other guy I want to have a better year, even though I think he was good when he played, is Campbell. And most of that's just playing all the snaps. Wolf, they got everything they could have possibly asked out of him. If he repeats last year, it'd be a marvel.
Yes, and you know what? I think Campbell, when I went back and started paying attention to him, he was great before his calf got messed with.
Yeah.
When he came back and then he got COVID, he wasn't quite the same. He got better every week, I think. And, I'm progressing. They said, well, I'm 100% this week. And then after the game, well, I'm still getting better. But Campbell was dominant. If they can limit his snaps and keep him as close to 100% as possible, these are the games where you really want to unleash him, because you're talking about the guards that they have. We're gonna need some play from our.
You make a really good point. I mean, but Campbell has to be treated like a top tier starting quarterback at this point. And when you got the game won early in the fourth quarter, you're up by 25 or whatever, and we presume that's going to happen six games this year for the Ravens or whatever. It probably won't. It may be three games, or maybe one game this year. Who knows? But that's when you got to get Campbell out of there. You could just sit him down early. It's got to be a priority of what the Ravens try and do. They have some age on that defensive line, and they depend on those guys awfully, all three of them on stars, to get it done. You can't sit them all down, but you can play them a lot less as the game moves on. You can also hopefully effectively ground it on the ground to finish that game early with the offense.
And really, Campbell brings a little bit something different than any of the other players on that line. He's a pure five technique, or basically, you know, for anybody listening, he's further away from the center than most of our guys. So you look at Brandon Williams, he's your guy dead set in the middle, playing the zero and a one. Mm-hmm. Derek Wolfe I think he's a great three tech, a better three tech than he is five tech. As far as the other five techs on our team, it's just Campbell. I mean, he's head and shoulders, I think, at that position, specifically lined up there than he is than any of the other guys.
Right. I mean, Campbell does even line up on the edge some, and certainly did even more in previous lifetimes at Jacksonville and Arizona. But the five tech position is a dying position. You almost can't afford to have it on the team. Not a pure five tech. The Ravens do not play enough base defense to have a five tech on the field all that much. So if when you're down to, you play a base defense, you know, 4-5 times a game, because anytime the other team plays 11, and that's most everybody plays 11 all the time, then you have a nickel in the game, and you only have two defensive linemen, and they're usually playing that 1 and 3.
And against the Browns, again, that's it's not brought up for coincidence. That's one of the teams that we're going to play base defense against. We had the same thing with Tennessee and New England last year.
That's
where
very true.
They were run-heavy teams, and who's most important in those games? You think Brandon Williams, but really Calais Campbell on the field, giving guards just the toughest of times. I mean, it's fun to watch. It was fun to watch early in the season before he got hurt in that Colts game, I think it was.
Yeah, so obviously very sad to lose him for a period of time. It did imperil the Ravens' season. They almost, you know, we forget in some ways with how it finished, how close they came, not just in the Cleveland game. Sure, 4th and 5, Lamar came out, saved the season, you know, got the Ravens going again. Then they really never looked back the rest of the way. They destroyed the remainder of the teams on their schedule. But it was really in those middle of game year games when they had the losing streak. They lost to Tennessee. They lost to New England. They were losing on the defensive line, and they were relying on Justin Ellis to play a ton of snaps. And you know, non-availability of various monstars played a part in all of that.
And Wolf was a man that really just gave everything he had. I mean, we were using him way more than he should for him to be at 100% effective. So, yeah, the health of the defensive line is going to be a big thing for the Ravens, especially since we're not playing the Browns until week 12 and 14. That rotation, I would love to get another body in there to help out. I think I like Broderick Washington more than you and other fans. I think he has NFL strength and can play. But we're going to need more than the Monstars and Matabike in there, so got to find it.
Right. I agree. I mean, I was very disappointed that they did not draft a defensive lineman. And they didn't have a great opportunity, but they did have Christian Barmore available when they picked at 27. And again, when they picked at 31, they didn't take him either time. I think he ended up getting drafted 37, 38, somewhere in there early in the second round. But he was head and shoulders the best defensive lineman in this draft. And that was a little bit upsetting that they didn't make a move on him when that's the team's probably most significant dearth of young talent.
Well, I remember we were talking about how we would grade the OA pick on the post-draft show. And, you know, I was critical on that pick because there were other players that I liked that I thought we could have traded back instead of jumping on OA right there. Mm-hmm. And Barmore was one of those guys, man. Like, it was just such a unique class, Ken, where there was one guy who should have been a first-round pick. I think he was underdrafted. And then there was quite a drop-off between your best guy and then your second-best guy. So that, to me, even made him more attractive. Like, hey, we can do it right now, and we're going to have the best defensive lineman out of anybody in football for this class.
Yeah, that's a great point. So not only do you have need, you have the guy is a first round talent, and then there's a huge drop off to the other players. So I understand the Bateman pick. I think he was a good plus value pick. I might not have had him as the 15th best player in the draft or the 12th best player in the draft, like some people did. But at 27, no problem in terms of value. Away, I'm not 100% sure exactly where he would have been drafted if the Ravens hadn't have taken him at 31. And you know, the sad thing about this is, the Ravens wouldn't have gotten Away and Barmore by trading back. They would have gotten one or the other and somebody at a lesser, you know, Freiermuth or somebody that, who wasn't a particularly high.
Early third, though. Yeah, you know, we would, you know, most of the math pointed to if we traded back 5 to 10 spots, we were going to get that team's third round pick.
Right.
So it would have been a useful player. But yeah, I mean, it fell how it fell. We're going to need this defensive line just to stay together. And that's the part, you know, is even so more than edge. I know that we, you know, Justin Houston or Melvin Ingram would look really good on this team and would be an upgrade. I agree. But it's just that interior defensive line, which is the key to getting pressure these days and causing problems with the ball coming out very fast, that, you know, I kind of am a little nervous about our depth there.
Yeah, I would like to certainly push that pocket. Well, great show. I really appreciate you coming on, Jason. We have you on for the Steelers and the Bengals show as well. Now, we've already recorded the Bengals show, but a weird situation. We may have blown the recording, and so we may have to redo it. But you'll be either hearing that one right before or right after this Browns show, and we appreciate you sticking with us. And, Jason, I appreciate you coming on again, buddy. Tell people where they can find your work.
Sure. It's Huddle It Up Films, both on YouTube and on Twitter. Please follow me on Twitter. I'll respond. And then as far as YouTube, I have a nice little family over there. It's not a ton of subscribers. I think I'm heading up to 600, but I would really like to get to 1,000 subscribers to be able to do more. It's a YouTube thing to be able to do more with my videos. So thanks to anybody out there in my football family that supports me.
All right. Real important. Make sure at least on Twitter you give Jason a follow, certainly on YouTube as well, if that's your thing. And he's a great follow. I can tell you that there's a lot of interaction during the day on Twitter and he's a big part of it. So make sure you give him that follow. For other people, if you're interested in doing a film study short, perfect season for you right now between now and camp. Football news is kind of light. But Football Hot Stove League is at its peak right now. So I'd love to hear what you have to say. Whatever you're passionate about, give me a little message on Twitter. We'll talk about it, and we'll probably be recording very quickly after you send me a message. Jason, thanks again for coming on.
Thank you, Ken. I really appreciate you.
We'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Introducing the Lowe's List for Innovation. While our aisles are filled with innovative products, we've selected our favorites just for you. Like the exclusive Whirlpool washer with industry-first 2-in-1 removable agitator. We love this washer because you can customize any load. And with other smart features to streamline your laundry routine, this product is a must-have for families. Shop the full Lowe's List of top picks at Lowe's.com. Lowe's, home to any budget, home to any possibility. U.S. only.